Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Real Deal with Thomas and Ari, the podcast where we talk about anything and everything to do with movies. Be sure to follow us at StingerEHS on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm Thomas.
I'm Ari.
And it's time for our feature presentation. So today we have a very exciting discussion. I have been waiting for this one. We talked a little bit about it last week. Today we're going to be talking about the brand new Spike Lee movie, The Five Bloods, which just released on Netflix.
And I somehow finished it before Thomas did.
Somehow. I had to eat lunch, dude.
Well, lunch I woke very up important. At like 7 o'clock today.
Seriously? Wow. Yeah. I woke up at like 9:30.
Well, I usually try to wake up at 9:30, but today I woke up at 7 o'clock.
Yeah?
Yeah. It'd be well, like that.
They really do. And truth be told, I woke up at 7:30 and thought, maybe I should just stay up. But I decided not to and went right back to bed.
Nice.
Yeah.
So well, The Five Bloods.
Yeah. I liked it.
I liked it too. It was really good.
All right. Boom. End of discussion.
Yes. Totally.
Just kidding. What do you want to talk about first?
I guess the first thing we should talk about, we did talk about last week what the plot was, but I guess we can sort of just give synopsis.
Yeah.
So basically, these, I think it's five of them, or is it four of them?
Well, four of them come back, because one of them died in the war, and they go back.
So, four Vietnam vets come back to try to retrieve the remains of their squad leader, and they also have a bunch of gold that is there that they're also looking for. Which is, I think, in total was worth like $6 million.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how much, but it was a lot.
And, a lot of money.
just want to mention, in addition to the four veterans that go back, the one veteran's son joins them. So five of them in total, but only four of them are the veterans. Anyway, that's the story of the movie. It's directed by Spike Lee, who, in my opinion, is really having a pretty good time nowadays with like really great movies. I mean, I've only really seen Black Klansman, but I've seen reviews of ones before that, like recent movies of his, and they seem to be getting good reviews too. So he's just on a roll.
Yeah. I mean, I've always really liked Spike Lee. I haven't seen that many of his movies, but I like the ones I have seen, I've really enjoyed. He makes a lot of very good, like political driven movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only seen three of his movies now, which is very bad in my opinion. I really need to work on that. I've only seen Do the Right Thing and Black Klansman and now The Five Bloods. But he really is one of the best filmmakers working today.
He really is, honestly.
I really like him. Anyway, with The Five Bloods specifically, there's a lot to talk about. But just to start it off, we could talk a little bit about one of the more obvious interesting choices in the film, which comes from the cinematography. The cinematographer was Newton Thomas Siegel, I think is his name. And in this movie, they switch between a lot of different aspect ratios. So what did you think about that?
I thought that was a really good choice. I mean, I think if they hadn't done it, it's still the whole movie would have worked. They used it as a transition from one time period to another.
Yeah.
Which I thought worked very well because the aspect ratio they used for the past was very reminiscent of the
very 60s nostalgic. And 70s.
It was sort of like one of those old TVs that's very boxy almost.
Yeah, like the news crews that would like actually go to the war and film stuff. It was like that kind of feel to it. 16mm film. I really enjoyed that. And then also how in like modern day when they were in the city, it was a very widescreen cinematic aspect ratio. And then once they got to the jungle, still present day, they switched it over to like a very wide and like all encompassing full screen ratio where it filled in the top and bottom black portions. I really like that.
Yeah, I like that as well.
So yeah, the aspect ratios, I think it's always an interesting choice when a filmmaker messes with aspect ratios, because obviously film is first and foremost a visual medium. And so it just really shows how much paying attention to what they can do with the way a film looks and maybe ways an audience wouldn't expect.
Yeah.
So, yeah. After that, what I loved even more than the aspect ratios, it might have been my favorite part of the film, was Delroy Lindo's performance as Paul.
Yes. Such an amazing performance. It was so good.
Now, if we have a regular award season this year in any form with Oscars at the end of it, if he doesn't get a nomination, there really is something wrong with the Academy. This was a really powerful performance. He really delivered. Mm-hmm. What else is he even amazing. In?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I'm gonna look it up.
Yeah, because now that I've seen this movie, I really want to watch more with him. It was just, from beginning to end, he really delivered and kind of sold you on, like, how much he was haunted by the Vietnam War and all these visions of his dead squad leader, played by Chadwick Boseman,
so
Stormin Norman.
He has been in Up, Malcolm X, Gone in 60 Seconds, Point Break, and those are really the ones that are most known.
Yeah, well, Malcolm X makes sense. That's another Spike Lee movie, so I guess.
He's also been in Clockers, which is also a Spike Lee movie.
Oh, Clockers, yeah. All right, so maybe a little bit of a Spike Lee regular that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
Might have to check out those movies soon as well.
I think a lot of the actors in this movie have been in past Spike Lee movies.
Yeah, definitely.
Because I know that the one Finnish character that they had
mm-hmm.
had been in Black Klansman.
Yeah, he was one of the, like, Klans members in that movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, another performance that I really liked, and it's actually kind of related to this one, the actor who played Delroy Lindo's son in the movie, Jonathan Majors. I really liked him too. It was kind of an understated performance, but I like what he does. He was in Last Black Man in San Francisco. I like him.
Yeah, I first saw him in the Last Black Man in San Francisco, and this in this one I wasn't sure what to expect with him out of a character.
Yeah.
Because in The Last Black Man in San Francisco, he played more of, like, in this movie, he's the son of Paul. Mm-hmm. And in The Last Black Man in San Francisco, he takes even sort of, like, a fatherly character. So
yeah.
I wasn't sure how to expect how he would portray this role, but I was really impressed.
Yeah, and honestly, I was kind of really impressed with everybody in this movie.
Yeah.
I thought everybody really gave a really great performance, and this doesn't really relate to performances necessarily, but I just really liked the addition of, I might butcher this, but Hanoi Hannah, that lady who was like the Vietnamese radio host.
Yes.
I really liked that addition, and I just love everything Spike Lee does with, like, inserts and just random things thrown in, like pictures of famous people, clips from famous, like, black rights activists. I like what he does, because it's just very bold. He just, throws it right at the audience.
I think the best use of that in this movie was, like, when the parts where they were talking about, like, My Lai and, like, the, like, how when the Vietnamese people would get, like, extremely upset with seeing the American GIs there, even though they're veterans in their 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And they would show, like, montages of, like, there's the famous picture of the soldier holding the gun to the VC soldier's head. And in the movie, they actually show the video, which I had never seen before.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
And so there's a lot of, it's a very gruesome movie, but it shows you more of the Vietnam War than you've really ever seen in any other war movie or anything like that.
Yeah, and even on top of that, not just with, like, historical things like that, even the actual story of the film, there's one moment I'm not going to spoil, but it shows, I'm sure you might be able to remember it, the very, very gruesome image that comes out of nowhere, kind of halfway through the movie, I think.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, that was horrifying. I really actually jumped at that. It was intense.
I didn't jump at that.
I jumped at that. That was surprising.
I feel like I didn't really jump, mostly because I was eating my lunch, so I wasn't really looking at the screen. But, like, I was paying attention. I just wasn't looking at the screen when it happened.
Yeah.
But I was like, not to use an expletive, dang. I was like, dang.
Yeah. Pretty crazy. On top of that, another thing that I think they might have been the most powerful part of this movie, at least for me, was I just really enjoyed how it went back and forth between the 70s and the present day, and how much everything they were talking about and thinking in the 70s still applied to like racial conflicts today. And I think that's kind of horrifying in a way, how much things stayed the same.
Well, yeah, and especially when this movie in particular is so very focused on the civil rights movement of the 60s and 70s, because that's when the civil rights movement was really at its peak with Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, and how there was this constant like back and forth in the scenes from the 60s where they were talking about like Black liberation and stuff like that. And then there was also back and forth in the present day when they were talking about the same thing.
Yeah. Like kind of like it seems like we're repeating ourselves. Maybe there's just the same things happening over and over.
Yeah. And I think it was extremely, I'm not sure if it was intentional or not. I assume it's not, that they released it at this period of time.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like a tipping point. And I think, I'd hope, in the like racial injustice in America.
Yeah, I think it's a really wonderful coincidence, actually, because really they announced the release date for this, like the new release date after all the coronavirus stuff, in like April, I think. Like we knew this was coming out then for a few months before any of these riots happened, and now with all these riots and then watching this movie, it really feels like it's just really great that it came out now.
Yeah.
And it's not like we can think that a movie will solve all of our problems, but it definitely adds to the discussion. I have a feeling it'll at least help some people think about things in a different way, hopefully.
Yeah. And another thing I really liked about this movie is that it sort of touched on how the Vietnamese people were still affected by the Vietnam War, and also how the Black soldiers in the Vietnam War would still sort of defend the war, even though they knew that the reason they were there was unjust.
Mm-hmm.
And they would still fight with the Vietnamese people, even though they both disagreed with the war, and they both were sort of given the short end of the stick because of it, which I thought was a really good, I thought it was very well written in that sort of sense.
Yeah, I really, that was a very scary part of this movie, just the thought that, like, you really felt how all of these people were fighting each other, but they didn't really know why. Like, there wasn't any clear-cut reason to it, and it felt a lot like they were being manipulated by the higher-up people in governments and such, and they were just, as they even say in the movie a few times, used as cannon fodder in many cases, like the Black soldiers specifically being put on the first lines. It's definitely, as always with Spike Lee, a very important, relevant, hard-hitting movie. On a more lighthearted note, I suppose, on the movie, I really enjoyed the soundtrack, the music used, especially a lot of songs from Marvin Gaye, very famous African-American musician. And I thought the use of that when the one character is walking through the forest alone, you know what I'm talking about? When that was playing then?
Yes.
Yeah, that was really great. And also, going along with that, now that I think about it, one of my favorite things that Spike Lee does that a lot of filmmakers can't pull off, but somehow Spike Lee pulls it off every time, is when the characters look directly into the camera. He does it a lot in this movie, and I really love it. It's amazing.
And it doesn't take you out of the movie at all. Like,
You
see it in other movies, it can be sort of disorienting and sort of like bring you out of it. But it really worked. It worked really well in this one.
Yeah, it almost makes the movie feel like it's speaking directly to you. Like,
yeah,
it's really talking to you, telling you to listen. And it's pretty great. So I feel like it is important, though, to talk about maybe one negative I did have with the movie. Which relates to the writing, the pacing mostly, how oftentimes towards the middle of the movie, it felt a little lost with sort of the intentions of the characters and where they were going. It didn't really feel like the audience knew exactly what was going to happen next. And maybe that could have been solved by a little bit more explanation in the first act. But it didn't really detract too much. It's just one little small thing I wanted to point out.
Yeah, I agree, but I didn't think it didn't really affect the whole experience that much for me.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess it would be good to mention I gave this film 4 stars.
I really gave it four stars too.
Yeah, it's my new favorite of the year, which, well, I guess isn't that hard to to do.
Yeah, the bar is very low.
Yeah. Hopefully that changes soon, but who knows? Segueing a bit into our next conversation with who knows what's happening next with movies. It seems good to talk about the Oscars, seeing as this film, as of now, has a pretty good chance.
Yeah, it's been the only, like, decently solid, good movie.
Yeah.
At least I've seen this year.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen other good movies, but none of them, most of them were too, like, too much of an indie movie or, like, not as well-known foreign film that they might not get the recognition. But this is, like, the first big budget, or not big budget, but modest budget American movie that was released on Netflix, so it'll get a lot of buzz. I could definitely see a screenplay nomination, seeing as it's actually, I think, the exact same screenwriters as Black Klansman.
I think the whole crew is almost the same.
Yeah, probably. And as some of you may know, Black Klansman won Best Adapted Screenplay with the same exact writers as this movie, so maybe this will get a nomination. I could definitely see a Best Director nomination for Spike Lee, Best Picture nomination, and I'm really, really hoping Best Lead Actor for Delroy Lindo.
Yeah. So I guess with this, we can also talk about some possible contenders for the year, if they release. Hopefully they do. Hopefully. So that would be... some of the ones that really pop out are Pixar's Soul, which is the, we've talked about this in a previous episode, I believe.
Yeah.
Which is their, it's obviously animated because it's Pixar. And it's about the music teacher who gets caught in the soul world.
I don't know. It seems a little strange. It's basically another, like, kind of abstract concept, Inside Out type movie. And actually, we talked about a little bit in a previous episode, the Cannes Film Festival and how they were going to announce what would have been there. Soul was confirmed to be included among the Cannes Film Festival selection this year. What do you think this would be nominated for if it does come out?
I mean, obviously Best Animated Picture. I mean, maybe Best Picture. Mean,
you never know. The competition is pretty thin, and I think recently Up and Toy Story 3 were both nominated for Best Picture, right?
Yeah, I think they were. I know Up
and
was.
Yeah, and Toy Story 3 was. I can confirm that one, so I guess, both of them were.
Yeah.
Maybe Best Original Score?
That would make sense. I mean, it's a movie that's supposedly seems to be based around music, at least as one of its main themes.
Composer?
So you hope that it has a good soundtrack.
It's showing three different composers, and one of them is that is John Batiste. Isn't he like the musician for like the Stephen Colbert show? I'm pretty sure.
I don't know.
Anyway, Soul. It's definitely a contender as long as it releases this year.
So another one which we haven't heard a lot about at all. Is Denis Villeneuve's Dune, which David Lynch made his own take of the Dune book thing, which was, people said, I think it was okay.
I've heard pretty bad things about it, actually. I don't know. I think it might be one of those, like, divisive 80s sci-fi movies, you know, where, like, some people hail it as, like, a genius masterpiece. Except I think David Lynch himself kind of, like, wants to forget about it. I think I've heard things like that.
I've never seen it. Either. I don't really know much about it. All I really know about this one is that I think Timothy Chalamet is in it.
Yeah, he's the lead character. And, Oscar Isaac.
It has, I think, yeah, Oscar Isaac.
And Josh Brolin. And that's all I can think of right now. There's definitely more famous people. Oh, Jason Momoa. He's in it. Aquaman.
Oh, yeah. And Zendaya.
Oh, yeah. She's in it. Yeah, there's a lot of famous people.
Yeah. So, yeah, that would be interesting if it comes out this year.
Seeing as it's like a big budget sci-fi movie by a famous auteur today, it'll definitely, as long as it's good, get some nominations. Probably quite a few, because it's kind of that interesting cross-section of a technically good movie with like sound and cinematography awards, and then also maybe writing and directing and best picture nominations. So that could be a big one.
So the next two contenders we sort of have to talk about, we both definitely talked about before a decent amount. It's our Tenet and the French Dispatch.
I'm sure everyone's aware of these.
Yes. I don't, just in case this is somebody's first episode that they're listening to, I guess we can do a short synopsis. So Tenet, directed by Christopher Nolan, set to release in theaters in July. Don't know how that's going to go about still. But, it's, I think Christopher Nolan wants to sort of spearhead the reopening of theaters.
He is 100% wanting this movie to be in theaters whenever that is possible. And it seems like right now they think that's July, which, I don't know. I guess we'll see.
And The Grand Dispatch.
You just combined two
The French Dispatch movies. Yes, I did. I combined The Grand Budapest Hotel and The French Dispatch. But The French Dispatch by Wes Anderson. Obviously, the trailer, from what we've seen, looks very Wes Anderson-ish.
As always.
I'm very excited for it. It looks
very one good. Thing that for some reason is a complaint from people, and I don't really get it, at least with a lot of Wes Anderson movies, and I suppose this one as well, is people often complain about like Wes Anderson movies always looking and feeling the same, and it's like, well, yeah, it's the same director. He has a style that he sticks with, and I don't see how that could be a bad thing, really.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never actually seen people complain about that before.
I've seen it before where like people are like every single movie of his just kind of feels the same, like he's just doing the same thing over and over. And I mean, if it ain't broke,
I don't get that. Yeah, I don't get that. The one complaint one complaint that I do have about Wes Anderson is that most of his casts are usually like only one people.
That is a little strange. I know, at least with this movie specifically, Jeffrey Wright is in it, I think.
Yeah, and in The Grand Budapest Hotel, I think he had maybe two people of color in the whole movie.
Yeah, it's a little strange.
Yeah. Great director, makes very white movies.
Yeah. This...
Very white.
This will get the usual nominations he gets, probably. So, like, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Screenplay, and like, Production Design, I bet. Things like that.
Yeah. And then, so, maybe some other ones that are a bit more up in the air.
Due to coronavirus.
These
might not get anything, though.
James Bond, No Time to Die, which was set to release, I think, in April. March.
Beginning of April.
Got pushed back. And Steven Spielberg's West Side Story, which was, I think, is still set to release in December.
Yeah, same day as Dune, I think.
Along with Black Widow, which I think is also supposed to release in December.
Maybe November.
Maybe. Around that time.
End of this year. So these ones, not as certain if they'll release or even get nominations. No Time to Die, maybe a Best Original Song nomination. Billie Eilish is writing it, right?
Yeah, you're right. And maybe some
Sound. Like technical awards, maybe cinematography. Yeah. Who is the cinematographer for this, actually? I know Roger Deakins has done a good few of these. I don't know if he did this one, though.
Let's see. No, it is Linus Sandgren, who was the cinematographer for La La Land and First Man.
So yeah, this is a very famous, or not very famous, but very talented, I mean, cinematographer. So yeah. that could be a possibility as well. And then West Side Story, probably best original score nomination, right? Yeah, because it's like a musical.
Does it count as original score? That always confused me when they did something like that. Because it's technically not their original score. Maybe
I doubt it could get an original song nomination unless they wrote a new song for this version.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, that one's a little up in the air. And then it's directed by Steven Spielberg. So if it's really good, then it's a pretty good chance he'll get nominated for Best Director.
And if I'm remembering correctly about West Side Story, I think the actress who Steven Spielberg picked to play the main character, Maria, is actually never been in a movie
before. Yeah, I think you're right.
And he picked her from, like, a video of her singing that went viral on Twitter.
Really?
Or something like that. Yeah, I think it was of her singing, like, Shallow by Lady Gaga. And she was in high school at the time, I think, too. So I remember this vaguely. It was, like, last year.
Yeah, and then playing opposite her in the role I cannot remember the name of because I've never seen West Side Story.
Isn't it Tony?
It might be Tony. Is Ansel Elgort.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So?
He has very interesting filmography.
Oh, for sure. I think I've only seen Baby Driver of his, which I liked him in that.
The fact you haven't seen The Fault in Our Stars.
I haven't.
I read the book and saw the movie. I was in like fifth grade.
Devoted fan.
I was in a major John Green phase back in 2015.
Which one? Wait. Is it John Green that also does Crash Course, or is that his brother?
Yes.
What does his brother do?
His brother does the science ones. The science Crash Course. Hank Green.
Yeah, very famous. Anyway, lastly, this might not get any nominations. Who knows? It's Black Widow. Maybe a visual effects nomination. I'm not expecting much.
Yeah, me neither. I wasn't expecting much out of the movie to begin with.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not very excited for whatever his name is. David Hopper, is that his name?
David Harbour. You just, wait.
Harbour. No, I did.
You just said you combined his real name and his character in Stranger Things.
I did that again. I feel like I did that earlier too, but in a different way.
I'm not sure. You combined French Dispatch and Grand Budapest. Yeah, that's funny.
The Grand Dispatch.
The Grand Dispatch and David Hopper.
Well, Hopper kind of sounds like Harbour.
I guess that's
okay?
A good point. I guess that's true. Yeah, things are still up in the air. I feel like this is kind of how we end every episode. Everything's up in the air with movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
yeah, that's
like
just
that.
How it is right now. It's kind of hard to avoid that. But I guess just to recap, The Five Bloods, very good movie on Netflix. Everyone should check it out. And as of right now, it seems to be the best Oscar contender right now. But maybe that'll change soon. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yep.
So you got anything else?
I don't.
All right. Well, then I guess that's all for today. And make sure to throw your popcorn away on the way out.